Welcome to season 5 of the Mindfulness Pilates podcast. I'm Beverly Densham, Mindfulness Pilates teacher of over 25 years and author. I really look forward to bringing you tips to reduce back pain to feel good, as well as working through stress to calm, with relaxation, positive affirmations and inspiration every week to inspire you in body and mind. Feel stronger, happy and calm. So welcome to today's podcast. I'm really excited to have a special guest on today. Today's podcast is all going to be all about overwhelming anxiety and managing intrusive thoughts. And Malvika, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
That's okay. So I'm just going to read a little bit of your bio, just so for anyone who's not met you before or read your blog or doesn't know about your work, just to get to know a little bit about you. So Malvika is a family law practitioner with a particular specialism in public and private children law. And she was named a Tier 1 Rising Star by the Legal 500 in 2023 and 2024. And you're also shortlisted for Family Law Young Barrister of the Year in the LexisNexis Family Law Awards 22 as well. You're very active in the wider legal community, founding member of Women in Family Law and Chambers representative within the West Midlands Family Law Bar Association. You're also a trustee for... I think it's easier when I ask you to do this. I don't know why I can't read today. You're also a trustee as well of Advocate, the Bar's pro bono charity, and a volunteer barrister as well. I'm just going to say a little bit more. You also do charity work as well. And also you're very passionate about mental health. That's actually how we met, wasn't it? And well-being amongst lawyers. And you also run your own blog on the subject, which I've really enjoyed reading recently as well. And you're also a champion for law care as well. Would you like to add a bit more to that as well, Malvika?
No. I was cringing the entire time you were reading that out. So I absolutely do not want to add anything else to it.
But yeah, thank you so much. Sorry about my reading abilities today, everybody, but never mind. But we got to meet, actually. It was really lovely. It was one of those wonderful moments where we got to meet as we were both guest speakers at the Association of Lawyers for Children. And you did a really, really inspirational talk on your story and about how, from your experience and your profession, how you can help others within your profession as well. And then I was there also to do an inspirational talk and help on particular tools to help with stress and stress management as well. So it was really, really nice to meet at the webinar.
Yeah, I think it was, I was rocking up and saying, here are all the problems, here are all the worries, here's everything that could go wrong. And then you went, and here is how we fix it.
Well, some of it, no, I think you gave an enormous, in today's episode, you are going to share at least 3 tips to help with mental health and, managing overwhelming anxiety and intrusive thoughts later on. But it'd be obviously really nice to share your story. But I think in that talk that you gave then, I was like, oh, it'd be so nice, you know, to have you on the podcast, you know, to share with others, because I think that's very, very valuable. I think to me, having good mental health is priceless. And life is like the waves of the sea. There are good, challenging and sad times of life. And your profession, particularly in family law, has extra pressures as well. So do you want to start from the beginning of, you know, the beginning of your story of becoming a lawyer and, you know, a bit about you personally as well. And then what happened with your mental health to then want to help others with their mental health? Because you really, really are doing that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I have so many conversations now about mental health and well-being that it's weird to me to think that when I was at university, you know, 10 years ago, I don't think it was really part of the conversation at all. When I started at university in 2012, You know, it was not something that was even on my agenda. I think I'd lived a pretty sheltered life. I'd gone to a very small school in Leicester, and I had a loving family. I didn't really sort of consider myself to have any acute mental health problems or anxiety. And it was a really sort of, I've had a very happy, very privileged childhood. Then I went to university in London, and within kind of my first term of university, my mental health started declining for reasons I've tried to analyze in hindsight, but there's probably a multiplicity of reasons for it. But I became what I would now say is quite depressed. At the time, I was sort of beating myself up, just thinking, why can't I just be happy? What's wrong with me? And then as I went through university, that kind of morphed into an anxiety that has stayed with me to differing degrees in the following decade. And that anxiety was debilitating at times, really debilitating. I tell people this example, but I often just sort of give an example of how it was like at its peak. But I remember there was one occasion that I got on a bus, and just before the bus had arrived, an orange rolled out of my bag, and this bus turned up, and it sort of the wheel was on the orange, and so I couldn't pick up the orange. And I got on the bus, and I remember thinking, a car's going to skid on that orange and it's going to cause a pileup. And I called up my mum and said, you need to go to the bus stop and pick up this orange, because what if a car skids on it? And my mum said, hey, that's ridiculous. I'm absolutely not going to go pick up this orange. But that was the sort of intrusive thinking that was going on constantly. It was relentless. I would wake up in the morning. My favorite part of the day was that immediate moment when you wake up and your brain hasn't had a chance to kick into gear yet. And then the minute that stopped, that was it. For the rest of the day, I'd be worrying about absolutely everything. I would catastrophize situations. I would convince myself that things I had done years and years ago were going to have long-lasting consequences. And it just got to the point where it was really, really affecting my quality of life. Now, by some sort of miracle, I managed to plod along. I did pretty well at university. I went to bar school on a scholarship. I applied for pupillage, and I got pupillage in my first round of trying, which when I look back at it, I think I don't even know how I managed that, because the underlying mental health issues were actually becoming so acute that I'm not quite sure how I managed. But I really resisted getting help. I really resisted going to the doctor because I didn't want to get a diagnosis of anything. I didn't want anything in my medical records to say she's got anxiety or depression. I don't know what I was thinking. In my head, I was thinking, I don't want anything to be used against me. I don't want anyone to perceive me in a certain way. And so I just kind of plodded along. And then during my pupillage year, which is a difficult year even for people who aren't struggling with their mental health, you know, you could have the best pupillage in the world and still feel under constant pressure because it is a 12-month job interview. And I think everything just sort of came to a head. And for various reasons, so work-related and personal reasons, my mental health just deteriorated quite dramatically. And I ended up trying to take my own life, which was a horrible episode, obviously. I remember sort of my parents walking into hospital and just the looks on their faces, you know, so having someone, you know, break that to them that that's what had happened. And I went home, I went straight home. I was in London at the time. My parents took me home. I was only out of pupillage for about a month. And then I had a phased return. I stayed at home in the Midlands and commuted every day. And I think at that point, it was a really, really dark month. I was in bed a lot. I could struggle to sort of get up. And I didn't really know what my future was going to look like. I thought my career was over. I thought it was over before it had even really started. And my parents let me adopt a cat. I'd never been allowed a pet before, but my dad was so desperate to sort of get me out of bed that he took me to the animal rescue and I adopted my cat for emotional support reasons, ostensibly, though she's the worst emotional support I could possibly ask for. And it was just a bit of a journey. But I think at that point, I had a bit of a reassessment and thought about what I need to do to change things. I had been sort of intermittently going to therapy, intermittently considering medication before then. But I sort of, you know, committed to therapy, committed to psychotherapy was placed on a higher dose of medication, if I recall correctly. I thought, well, I'm not happy in London. I wasn't particularly happy during my university years. I wasn't particularly happy during pupillage. So if I don't like it by now, then try something different. And that was really big shift for me, because in my head, I'd always thought high-flying lawyers are going to be in London. But then I moved back to the Midlands. And I realized, oh, that's nonsense. You know, I'm incredibly happy in outside London. I'm evangelical about it. And I'm always telling people to practice outside London. And that was a really good decision for me. But then ever since then, I wanted to be open about what I'd gone through, because I know how many people there are in this profession who struggle with their mental health, but don't feel able to say anything about it because they worry that they'll lose work or lose instructions or be thought of in a different light to their colleagues. And the reality is, when I started being really open about my experiences, I was inundated with messages from other people, junior and senior, saying, I've been in the exact same boat as you, and this has happened to me and that's happened to me. And that's been really, really lovely, because I think when you aren't able to speak about these things, it's an incredibly isolating experience, incredibly isolating. But then you realize it's actually probably, in reality, a universal experience. And a lot of people are going through exactly the same thing that you are. So that's the reason why I do what I do now. I'm certainly not the poster child for kind of perfect mental health now. Absolutely not. As you said, mental health, I don't know if you said this before we started recording or after, mental health fluctuates, and I have, you know, periods where my mental health declines again. But I'm still developing mechanisms to manage that, and I'm constantly learning from other people as well.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for sharing all of that. And I know we've met before, but I just want to say out loud, you know, I'm sorry that, you know, that all happened to you, but also thank you for sharing your story, because, as you say, that gives other people permission to open up and maybe seek the help they need too, doesn't it? And yeah, and it is like the waves of the sea, mental health, and we can find more and more, you know, coping strategies. So what help did you get? You obviously did go to hospital and obviously saw the doctor and had therapy. What other things have helped you on your journey?
Yeah, so I will say that I was in a very privileged position, because I hate to say it, because I think the NHS is such a fantastic institution, but my experience of NHS mental health services was not great. It's an overwhelmed, creaking system. And so, you know, things like I had to go to a private psychiatrist to be assessed, which I was privileged enough to be able to do. I did a sort of short course of talking therapy with the NHS that wasn't particularly helpful to me and probably not tailored to my needs, but that was, you know, what was available. And unfortunately, the kind of help that a lot of people need isn't publicly available. And I'm acutely conscious of that. And it's something I'm always talking about. So I was lucky enough that I had my parents to help me. And I was able to, you know, get help with funding a private psychotherapist so that I could speak to someone. And now I'm obviously funding that myself. But I know that not everyone has those resources. So what I find has really helped me, first of all, speaking to my GP. So as much as all these techniques that we're going to talk about, I'm sure, are incredibly important in terms of our management of our own concerns, I think you need to know when to seek professional help.
Absolutely, yeah, 100%.
That was something I really struggled with, because I didn't, like I said, want a diagnosis or want to be labelled as anything. And, you know, actually, I've been lucky enough to have the same doctor for a really long time who knows me very well. And being able to speak to my GP, have someone who's given me continuity of care, given me options. I remember when I first started discussing medication with my GP, and they were so resistant. I was so resistant to it. And medication's not the right decision for everyone. It happened to be for me. It was a very personal decision. But I remember saying, I just don't want to do it. I want to try the talking therapy. And the GP said to me, look, I think you should do the talking therapy. And I think that's really important for you to unpick the reasons why you're thinking the way you are. But the medication will slow your brain down so that you can actually process what you're being told. Because at the moment, it's going so fast that you're not actually taking on board anything. Eventually, it turned out to be right. And I did take the medication. But so I suppose the first thing is seek professional help. Have those discussions with your doctor, explore the options, and don't feel like you need to manage everything yourself just by watching a bunch of podcasts and YouTube videos and talking to other people, all of which is great, but sometimes you need to take that additional step and seek professional support. I'm still seeing a psychotherapist every week. I use an app called BetterHelp, which every single podcast in the land, I think, is sponsored by BetterHelp, which is how I heard about it. Mm-hmm. And I quite like that because you can pick a therapist. So they match you with therapists, you can choose. But if that therapist isn't really your speed, you can switch to another therapist. There's a continuous messaging app, so you can message your therapist between sessions. They offer, as part of the membership, kind of group sessions on various different topics, which I found helpful. It's taken me a few turns, but I really like the therapist I'm with at the moment, who knows me quite well now, and I find that a really helpful resource. I have learned some techniques from him. I was speaking to you about this before we started recording the podcast. My therapist will tell you that I'm great at engaging with the sessions, doing the homework in between the sessions.
Yeah, homework. Yeah, carry on.
He tells me sort of technique after technique, and it just flies right out of my brain. And when I'm in a spiral, I'm just unable to think. I need to go back to the techniques that I was taught in therapy, and I just sit there and wallow in my spiral. But some of the things that that I've learned in therapy, in group therapy and individual therapy, which I find quite helpful, is so I often need a lot of external reassurance that what I'm worrying about is not something I need to worry about. Even though my rational side of my brain knows it's not something to worry about, the irrational side of me just cannot accept that. And so I'll call up my parents, I'll call up my boyfriend, I'll call up my best friend and say, need to talk this through with you. Just tell me that this is nothing to worry about, even though I know it's nothing to worry about. Mm-hmm. And my therapist, we've talked a lot about how do I give myself that reassurance? How do you get the reassurance internally rather than seeking it externally? And he said, okay, well, you say that you're going to call up your best friend and talk her through what you're worried about. What do you think she would say? And he said, have the conversation that you would have with her, but just have it in your own head, because you know what she would say and you know how she would respond. So I try, and rather than pick up the phone and call someone, because you can't always do that, they might not always pick up, to go, okay, what would they say? Yeah, this is what they'd say, and this is how I'd respond, and this is what they'd say, and have the conversation anyway, but just without the other participant. And I found that quite helpful. One of the weirder techniques I learned in a kind of anxiety therapy session on BetterHelp, when they first explained it to me, I thought this is woo-woo and weird, I'm not going to do it. But it was, imagine your anxiety as a kind of physical thing. Imagine you're pulling it out of your body and putting it on the table in front of you. You know, what does it look like? For some reason, my anxiety looked like a giant furball. It was sticky and it was hairy. It looked like one of my cat's furballs. And it said, have a conversation with your anxiety. And I thought, this is rubbish. I don't know why we're doing this. But I started having a conversation with the anxiety. And, you know, I was saying, anxiety, why are you making me worry about this? Why are you triggering me in this way? And in my head, anxiety was saying to me, well, I'm doing it to warn you because I'm trying to keep you safe. I'm trying to make sure that you know that if you do this, this could potentially happen. And then I say to anxiety, well, I appreciate that, anxiety, but that's not particularly helpful at the moment. You know, I understand that you're trying to help me and I understand why you exist, but at the moment you're not helping me. And it's utterly bizarre how helpful I found that exercise by the end of it. Yeah. So that was a slightly weirder technique that I'd learned in therapy, which I found quite helpful.
So pausing on that one, we'll pause between each one. So, I mean, that one, when you're saying all of that, it sounds quite funny. And of course, anxiety isn't funny. I mean, anxiety can go to so many levels, right up to depression, and it can go to panic attacks. And that is absolutely not funny. But when you're describing yourself talking to the anxiety furball, it actually sounds quite humorous.
Yeah, I mean,
I wonder how many of us listening, anyone listening to the podcast, going to be talking to any worries and anxiety and seeing what happens.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I've been exploring in therapy is not seeing my anxiety as a threat or an enemy, but trying to understand the reasons why it exists in the first place. Because everyone has anxiety, and a certain level of anxiety is natural and helpful. You know, it makes you work harder, it makes you be cautious, it makes you be careful. But it's when it goes beyond that and starts to, you know, make you doubt yourself and question your judgment, that's when it starts to become an issue. But actually, if I see my anxiety as it's just trying to make sure that I'm not making mistakes, it's just trying to make sure that I'm being careful and that I care. But it's just, you know, I just need to tell it to pipe down every now and then.
Such a good phrase, tell it to pipe down.
Yeah, so pipe down anxiety is my second tip.
Absolutely.
And then my third is one that I'm promised my therapist I will try, because, you know, as much as other things help me, like running or whatever, you can't just walk out and run necessarily all the time whenever you're having anxiety attack. So he told me to tense up my entire body, tense it up as tightly as I possibly can, my shoulders, my hands, everything, and then hold it and then release. And I'm trying to do that kind of more and more, because when I'm in an anxiety spiral or a spiral of negative thinking, I struggle to have control over that space around me, control over my body. I sort of feel like I'm sinking into a kind of pit or a bath, and it's overwhelming. The water's coming over me and it's overwhelming me. Whereas if I tense up my body, it kind of feels like I'm bringing everything into my body. I'm bringing the control back to me, and I've got control of it all, and it's all held within me, and now I can release it. So it's kind of, I have found it helpful in the moment to just bring it all in and let it all out, just for sort of immediate release.
Yeah, it's a really good one. Funnily enough, I was teaching that in mindfulness Pilates this morning at the end of class. It's obviously lovely doing it lying down or in bed, but you can literally do it at the desk. You can do each bit of your body, or you can tense your whole body, or you can do bit by bit and then tense your whole body. Should we do a few now?
Sure. I am quite anxious today, so that's
okay, we will, and then we'll do a breathing exercise after, but let's just do a few of these as you brought it up. We'll add a bit extra in today. So you can do eyes open or eyes closed, and sit tall, don't sit like a banana, or lie down if you prefer. And you're just going to, should we tense up the whole body? Yeah, I think we will. We're just going to tense up the whole body and your hands, make a fist, and your arms and your shoulders if you want, your face. Breathe in and breathe out. Blow any tension away out the window. And let's do that three more times. Breathing in as you tense, you can do your feet, calves, thighs, buttocks, hands, arms, face. Breathe in and breathe out, relax. Twice more. Breathing in as you tense, tense, tense. Breathe out, relax, relax, relax. And one more. Breathing in as you tense. And breathe out, relax. And then slowly open your eyes, or if your eyes open already, slowly coming back. How do you feel after that?
And good. I think sometimes when I was talking to you before we started recording about just being time poor, that a lot of the things that I want to do to manage my anxiety, by the end of the day, when I finished working, all I want to do is scroll on my phone rather than sitting there implementing any of the techniques I want to implement. Whereas actually that is something that I can just do in the moment, takes 20 seconds, and it helps.
Yeah, exactly. I think before we started recording, we were talking quite a bit about that. You were saying, you know, I don't have time, I don't have time. And end of the day, I'm too tired to have time. I'm not going to sleep. Or as you say, scroll on your phone or whatever. But I feel part of my job is to educate that we do have time. It's because there was somebody on the podcast. I've interviewed a few lawyers on the podcast already, but there's another lady called Sally who works for JP Morgan, and she used to be exactly the same. And I think a lot of people in the law profession, those who I've met, you know, so far over the last few years, would maybe say the same as you, that they haven't got time. But the time that most of us actually need is just to take, as you say, a few seconds here or a minute there and a minute there. But that minute can be literally in the bath when you go for a toilet break, doors shut, in the bathroom, standing up and breathe for 30 seconds or a minute, or to do your tensing up and releasing if that's what works for you. And that is what can be, Sally said that was like a game changer for her. She used to go from back to back meetings, with clients in America, and she'd have hardly any time to go to the toilet. And then it's on to the next call, and then she's got to write up a report or whatever it might be, and then on to the next call, and it's like there's hardly any time to go to the toilet. And she'd realized in the end she's just got to take an extra minute in a bathroom break. or you can obviously use it at the desk or before a court hearing in a private room or whatever. But yeah, so what I think would be really nice to
tendencies of lawyers is when I think in my head, because you asked me about journaling before we started recording.
Yeah.
And in my head, I was like, I'd love to journal. In my head, I was like, I need to write something really good in my journal. Or if I need to meditate, I want to do a really good meditation. So, for that, I need a set period of time. I need to really commit to it. I need to be really present. And that's what it's like in my head. Whereas actually, even if I write total rubbish on a piece of paper first thing in the morning, it doesn't matter. No one's going to read it. It's not for anyone else. But I think it's this constant sense of even the techniques I want to use to manage my anxiety are causing the anxiety because I want to make sure it's perfect.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good point. That's exactly what Sally said as well in one of the episodes. She was like, okay, I've been to the meditation class and we've done 45 minutes and we're supposed to do 45 minutes practice a day. And that's what we're supposed to do. And then she's done like Headspace app or different things. She was saying, but she never then, the problem is that you have to incorporate it into your lifestyle for it to work at work or to work in your daily life. If everything's completely separate, like great, if running helps you de-stress, brilliant, go running. Walking helps you de-stress, go walking. But like you said about running, we can't go running every hour. We can't go sailing or whatever it is, swimming in the sea or swimming in the pool even. And some, it's just not realistic. So a minute here and a minute there and giving yourself permission to do that can make all the difference. And yeah, of course, have a hobby, have a passion or have a sport or something that you love to do. But we can't do it all the time. So doing a minute here and there, and then just say well done to yourself for what you do, whatever that is, and however short it is as well. So 1 to 7 minutes can make a huge difference. So do you fancy, should we go into the breathing exercise now?
Yes.
So do you want to share what you had to say about this before we clicked record? So I was asking you about this, and you were saying that you were trying some breathing in for 8 breathing technique, and you found you ended up nearly hyperventilating.
Yeah, I mean, I got a Fitbit for my birthday, and you get like a free subscription of the something, and there's a section in there that had like guided meditations, walking meditations, and I thought, okay, I'll go out for a nice walk tonight and do the meditation at the same time. And I think it asked me to maybe breathe in for about 8 counts or something, and it was so difficult, and I couldn't hold my breath for that long, and I couldn't release it for that long, and I ended up just sort of struggling to breathe, which was not very relaxing at all. And I was just thinking, well, how am I going to get home without hyperventilating?
Oh dear. Yeah, that's not the idea. That's not the idea. No. Well, thank you for sharing that. In case anyone else can, if you're listening and you're relating to that, I did actually have, I had a new client started with me earlier in the year. There was a very poor sleep, waking in the night with like pains and cramps. But she also had high anxiety. So she said to me, oh, I've been trying the breathing. And then she kept saying that she'd end up not with a panic attack, but like you were saying, she was ending up like more anxious than when she started. But the good news is she started at the beginning, not accounting to 8, yeah, starting at 1. Again. So we're going to, today, what we're going to do just for a minute or two is start at 1 and we'll build up to a little number 5 breathing exercise to de-stress. So we're going to do that now. So you can do this sitting at your desk, standing, lying down, or walking. Yeah. So enjoy. We're going to go into it now. Obviously, don't do it driving. Okay, so welcome to the number 5 breathing exercise. You're going to sit or lie down, or however is comfortable for you. You're going to close your eyes. If you are sitting with good posture, so don't sit like a banana. You're going to sit nice and comfortably with your shoulders relaxed, happy shoulders, feet hip width apart, and just breathe and relax. Now allow yourself to let your breathing slow down. So you're just, to start with, going to breathe in for 1 and out for 1 a few times. So in through your nose and out through your mouth, relax. And just let your breathing slow down. Well done. And breathe into your tummy. So let your tummy rise and fall as you breathe in through your nose. And then out through your mouth, relax. These are a few warm-up breaths. You're going to do one more. Just relax your shoulders. And again, in through the nose and out through the mouth, relax. And now we're just going to gradually change the breathing, just very gently and slowly. And just let your breathing slow down. And you're going to breathe in for a count of one and out for a count of two, relax. Well done. And then you're going to breathe in for two and out for a count of three, relax. Well done. On the next one, you're going to breathe in for three and out for a count of four, relax. This is like a reset. It's really calming on your nervous system. And now just relax the head, neck and shoulders. Well done. The next one, you're going to breathe in for four and out for five, relax. And the finale one is in for five and out for up to six, relax. Well done. Just going to do one extra one, in for five, out for six, relax. Relaxing your back, hips and thighs. Taking this reset time to calm your nervous system, reset and feel stronger in body, mind, your mental health, resilience and happiness. Give yourself a smile. Take a breath in or yawn. Wiggle your fingers and your toes. Either enjoy that again or sending you lots of love. Okay, so welcome back after the number five de-stress breathing exercise. So for you listening, how do you feel after? Did you join in? Make sure you always do that really calmly, slowly, gently. Do what's comfortable for you. Really listen to your body and mind on it. So Malvika, I'm going to get you to come back. So how did you find that? How did you feel?
I found it a lot more manageable because we were stepping up slowly rather than me becoming overly ambitious and trying to breathe in for eight counts. But I think this is the sort of thing I need to work on, just fitting in into little gaps in my life. I don't know if you've heard of fitness snacking, you know, standing by the kettle and doing a couple of squats rather than necessarily having to go to the gym and lift heavy. I think I need to do some wellness snacking.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, you can do this at your desk. You can do this on a walk. You can do this, as you say, at the kettle. You can do this. You can do this standing. You can do this in the bathroom. You can do this before a court hearing. You can even do this during a court hearing with your eyes open. You can, you can do these things at different times of day. You can do eyes open. You can do eyes closed. You can gaze at the sky. It's a lot of people find eyes closed is good for a little bit just to take external, distractions out of the way. But yeah, let me know how you get on with this.
Will do. I mean, you really kindly sent me a copy of your book, so I am going to be working my way through it.
Oh, very good. Very good. Report back. It'd be really great to hear how you get on. So yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story today. And just recapping on those tips, which I think are hugely, hugely important. I probably haven't shared on the podcast before. When I have shared that I was in a major road traffic accident in Australia. And that's when I personally had mental health struggles. One of the main times in my life that happened, with depression and post-traumatic stress disorder, quite severe, very high anxiety and panic attacks, which can be, but I did actually at that time, I did see a psychologist and they did prescribe medication, which I did take at the time up until I had my, I stopped taking it. I was able to cut down and stop taking it when I had my son actually. So that was quite good. But as you say, so your tip one was about speaking to your GP. And I think that's so important that we can just feel comfortable to ask for that help. So that, that was your tip one today.
I think I went well beyond my three tips. It was talking to my GP, which was really important, and then trying to find internal reassurance rather than seeking external reassurance of what my worries are. So who would you talk to when you're having an anxiety spiral? What would they say? What would they respond to you? How would you respond to them? Have that entire conversation in your head without necessarily pick up the phone and call them. And slowly, I'm hoping that I will start to reassure myself as well.
And thank you for that. And obviously seeing a therapist can be really good. I've noticed that there seem to be more and more law firms who are offering confidential counseling and confidential therapy as well. Have you noticed that from your side?
Yeah, I have. I don't know necessarily what the setup is in chambers so much, because obviously it's a different setup to a law firm. In chambers, we have a well-being committee that kind of does little activities, sitting yoga, head massages, that kind of thing, relatively regularly. But I do think there's generally been an uptick in firms and chambers recognizing the importance, just from a business need perspective, of promoting, you know, for barristers, solicitors, well-being.
Yeah. They need me as well. Thank you so much for sharing those tips. We're going to pick a card. Every episode, we pick a positive affirmation card message of the day. By the way, one way, in case you're interested in trying this, Malvika, or for you listening, is with journaling, you can literally do it for a minute as well. So you pick an affirmation, which can obviously be from our book, Stress to Calm in 7 Minutes for Lawyers, or you can get a deck of affirmation cards, give them a shuffle, step one, step two, fan them out, step three, pick a card. So I had picked a card before the episode, but I feel like picking another one now. The one earlier was goal setting, and I'm just like, I wasn't feeling it, so I'm picking another one now. But if you like the goal setting one, Malvika, and for you listening, that's fine. But best card for this episode, take a breath in, take a breath out. It says, I am happy. I feel happy inside and out. So what you can do with this, you can either think about what it means to you. You can talk with somebody about what it means to you. You can also set an alarm, like a stopwatch or an alarm on your phone, and write down what it means to you rather than just like repeating the affirmation. But as we're on the podcast, we like to talk. So Malvika, what does that mean to you today?
I think sometimes I lose a sense of perspective in that I can't zoom out of my life and I focus on what's troubling me in the moment, what I'm anxious about in the moment. You know, I'm giving a talk later in the back of my head, that sort of whirling in my head. Mm-hmm. But actually, when I zoom out of my life and I look at the overall picture of my well-being and how I do feel happy. Anxiety isn't me. I'm not anxiety. This thing I'm anxious about is not me. It's just a thing. But when I actually zoom out of my life, generally, I'm so grateful for so many things. And I'm so happy with my friends, my family, my work, that I sometimes need to remember that this is just one snapshot in time, which is not me and is not my life.
Yeah, something that you said in the webinar, which really resonated with me, I'm sure it will with a lot of people. Something you said was, take the bloody holiday. Are there any sort of, I will share it. We'll go back to the affirmation again in a second, but have you got anything else to say on that, on work-life balance, working hours, you know, a few parting words on that before we head off today?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure amongst junior barristers in particular to never say no, take every single case, not turn things down, because you're building your practice, you're building your reputation. I imagine it's because of what I went through myself that I did not enter my practice with that approach. I just didn't. You know, of course I wanted to work hard. Of course I wanted to build up my practice, but not at the expense of my health or my well-being, because I just knew that that was more important. So I have really supportive clerks, and I was very open with them about my difficulties, and I set down some hard lines in practice development reviews of things that I need to do to be happy within my practice, to manage my mental health and also have a successful practice. And I think you need to be able to draw those parameters, which is really scary when you're junior. I think I was just in a kind of screw it phase where I thought, you know, I've been through much worse. I don't really care at this point what other people might think of me. I'm going to do what's best for me. So if that means booking out prep days, if that means, as I do, you know, I don't do more than one case in a day unless it's a favor or because of, you know, I'm doing a favor for a client or a solicitor or whatever. Whether that means booking out a certain amount of time. I went on sabbatical for 3 months at the end of last year. I remember speaking to one of my clerks and saying, you know, so how's this going to impact my career? And he went, well, Malvika, I'd much rather you just go and take the leave and come back refreshed and rejuvenated than sack off the job. So go, it won't matter. And I came back and I felt so much better. And I've felt, you know, rejuvenated and ready to take on things. So it does reap dividends, but you've got to be willing to do it in the first place to advocate for your practice, to advocate for what you need to do to manage your well-being. Because particularly if you're like me at the self-employed bar, you have the ability to do that. You can take off time whenever you want. Of course, you won't get paid for that, but you can take that time off. You can manage your own practice, mm-hmm. by your own boss. So make the most of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. I really felt that was important to just, you know, say that, you know, talk to you about that, because I really feel it. There's so many pearls of wisdom there. What does the I am happy, I feel happy inside and out mean to you listening? And what does that mean to me? Yeah, it actually means the world to me when I do feel like that. And a bit like you, Malvika, you know, my mental health has had ups and downs. And for me, although I, of course, teach about the body with the mindfulness Pilates side of things, for me, and that obviously does help mental health, but for me, I think mental pain is much harder than physical pain. Having experienced the extremes of physical pain, I think that a lot of people get a lot more help physically than mentally. And I think because it's sometimes invisible as well, I think it's so important that we look after our mental health. And you know, it's obviously been great to have you on the podcast today, and thank you so much for, you know, for being here and sharing your story. All your details will be in the show notes for everyone to connect with you as well, and just really want to thank you for your time today. Any parting words before we head off?
No, thank you so much for all the work you're doing as well, because that's the kind of voice that we need in this overcrowded space of lawyers talking to themselves and not necessarily knowing what's good for them. I think sometimes we need perspectives like yours to remind us what's important.
Yeah, thank you very much. And perhaps consider taking 1 minute to look after you at work today, or more if you want to really go for it. And for you listening, lots of love. Thank you for coming. So thank you so much for listening to the Mindfulness Pilates podcast. Please rate and review on your podcast platform. You can access the free healing meditation to reduce back pain to feel good in the 3-minute morning routine on my website. And you can book your Pilates tailored toolbox, one-to-one program, of course the Mindfulness Pilates classes on Zoom, and also stress calm workshops and programs on my website. Or just get in touch at www.mindfulnesspilates.com.